Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 132 of D&D Discussions, a podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty darn good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Gotten to play some D&D lately. I've been painting some of my miniatures. I finished season one of Daredevil. It was good. It's been a good last few weeks. And we're really excited. We've got a ton of stuff to talk about because things have happened. Some fairly large things have happened in the last few weeks. So Ben, why don't we just like dive right in, because there's quite a bit of stuff to cover. First off being Dragon Delves has been fully revealed. This is the Dragon Anthology that is coming out fairly soon, actually. Its release date currently is July 8th. So it is coming. The pre-order is now up on D&D Beyond. You can get the physical, digital, or the digital and physical bundle as well. They have a short little video, and I'm sure we're going to start getting some videos from the main D&D channel kind of covering it and about it. This is a series of 10 different adventures for characters level 1 through 12, meeting each of the chromatic and metallic dragons as you delve into unique layers suitable for any campaign setting. So this is, again, another anthology book. I really have liked the anthology book so far. The Radiant Citadel, Candlekeep have all been fun, and I've played adventures from all of them. But Ben, let me know what you think. But I'm a little annoyed at this book.
Do you think disappointed might be a more of a descriptor for that? Because that's what I feel.
Yeah, there's definite disappointment because I was really looking forward to this, honestly. Like when they announced kind of their overall roadmap and they said they were going to do a Dragon Anthology book, I was like, oh yes, this is, I love me some dragons. I love their anthology books. Bring this on. This is awesome. And then they released some of the official stuff and my disappointment hit max level when I saw that the anthology level was only 1 through 12 of any freaking book to start your level range with like 10 as your base. This should have been it. It's dragons. Like, of any book where you could showcase some high level adventures that, you know, were 1, 2, 3 shots, something like that. This was it. And you picked levels 1 through 12. Like, I am severely disappointed. Like I said, I feel like it should have been like 10 through 17 or 10 through 20 or 12 through 17 or 12 through 20 or something of that, like, where you could really showcase these high level adventures, get to play high level characters, and then, you know, dragons in their best form are going to be the adult and the ancient variety.
Yeah.
Like, let people, especially the new ones, because the new ones have more stuff you can do with them. They're far more unique. Showcase that. Like, you could only showcase adult and ancient dragons with those levels so much, and that's only going to be really towards the higher end of that. Like, mm-hmm. And again, we don't know what these are yet because the book is not out. I'm sure that there's some wormlings and some young dragons and whatnot through some of these adventures. But again, at the end of the day, the wormlings and the young dragons don't have as much cool stuff, as much of the new cool stuff that the adults and the ancient ones do. I don't know. I feel like that's just, for me, a huge miss. And I may still get the book. I may. but I feel very disincentivized from getting it just based on the level range alone.
Yeah. I'm just kind of looking through D&D Beyond really quick just to kind of get an idea of, you know, CR levels for some of these things. And like the adult dragons start at a CR of 12. So going from there, it's like, okay, well, if it's a level 12 party, you know, maybe we're looking at, you know, a CR 14 or something like that based on whatever their new calculations are. That's just a guess. I'm not doing the math. I don't care enough. But, you know, we got wormlings at level one or for a CR one. And then, you know, adults being around like 12 or so. Ancients are, you're looking at like 20, 23, somewhere in there. Like that is high tier play that I think that a massive dragon attack of some sort would be a really cool, you know, like small plot hook. You know, we talked about many times about how generally when you're going to be playing high level D&D, it's going to be like a one shot. What is the perfect enemy for a level 20 one shot other than a gigantic evil dragon? I mean,
yeah,
throw it out there, you know, use your new stat blocks that you're, you know, really touting and saying that you've, you know, improved them so much and give us that high level of play.
Yeah. Cause even at level 12, if you've got an ancient, if there's an ancient dragon in any of these anthology adventures, it's going to be, there's going to be a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
To help you deal with it. It's not going to be you dealing with it. There's going to be some sort of MacGuffin to help you deal with it. And even level 17. So you can get some of your capstone stuff. Like once you hit those higher levels, you can take on those CR, you know, 20, 22, 23 things with a party of four. Like that, it's totally, totally viable. And so I don't know. Like I said, it's, I am given the subject matter and the perfect opportunity to showcase like tier three and tier four play from an official standpoint with dragons, especially your redone dragons. I am disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, who knows? It might work. It might work out really well and we're super excited, but I just think that it's a huge whiff, just an absolute huge whiff.
God, even if they said level 1 through 20 and 2 or 3 of the adventures were tier 3 and 4, that would be better than nothing. Capping at 12 is just, again, it's, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's disappointing for sure.
Definitely.
You know what's not disappointing though, Ben?
Cookies?
2D virtual tabletop continuing to get updates.
Oh yeah. Oh my god.
In this case, stickers.
I clicked on a video and all of a sudden it was really loud in my headphones, but I don't think the recording picked it up. Oh my gosh. This was like an out of nowhere kind of surprise for me on the virtual tabletop map function that they have. And I've been able to kind of look at it and play with it a little bit. There's not a ton there yet. So you don't have a huge variety. So that's kind of a bit of a bummer, but it does have things like tents, trap doors, you know, cauldrons, like some stuff that, you know, your players might actually be like interacting with, which is kind of neat. The neatest thing about it, though, is that just like the tokens that you put on there, you can actually hide those things, too. So, like, again, like, let's say we're putting a trap door in. If you want it hidden, you know, you don't have it or need to have it built into the map automatically. Just put it in there, hide the actual thing. And then if you can flip it on and then once it's discovered and everybody sees that there. But like overall, this is a feature that's it adds a lot more to the virtual tabletop already, which I think is absolutely amazing. Like I said before, I'm using the map function and everything. Absolutely love it. It's great. And the more they add to it, the more robust it is. And this is something that I didn't even know that I wanted that is there, which I think is just fantastic.
Yeah, it can, I think it continues to be like one of the best surprises about D&D Beyond as just a becoming more versatile, easy to use virtual tabletop with the D&D Beyond integration.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So it takes basically like an Owlbear Rodeo, but then it's fully integrated into D&D Beyond. So I really do like that aspect about it. And whenever I need a virtual tabletop now, that's the one I use.
Yeah.
Partially because my group uses D&D Beyond character sheets, obviously, but it's good enough. It's good enough and it's getting better. Mm-hmm. And it just works. It's very easy, very quick to set up.
Yeah. I mean, there's trees here, which I mean, what's a great way to hide something? Just put it in trees and shrubberies and stuff. You've got like stairs. So, you know, hidden staircases and stuff, rugs that you can put on top of things. There's like carts and horses. So you can actually like, you know, work on a chase scene or moving things around and stuff. It's just some of those little things are great. There's a pit, ladders. I mean, yeah, just things that are great. There's, you put coffins in here. You have open and closed versions. So guess what? You can open a coffin up. You know, it helps make it just a little bit more interactive, which is really fun and kind of cool to do. So I'm a big fan of it. It's pretty great.
Yeah. Kudos to them for continuing to develop this. And especially with what we talked about with Sigil episode or two ago. It's really good to see that they are continuing to evolve and update and add features to this 2D virtual tabletop for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Funny enough, you asked.
Oh, that, go ahead.
Yeah. So I honestly don't know how much of this I can really talk about. I don't think I can, but I was sent a D&D Beyond survey about, you know, like, hey, what do you suggest and different things and stuff. And they did reference and talk about, you know, potential features coming to D&D Beyond. I don't know how much I can actually say, so I'm not going to like call anything out or anything. But I will say that one very notable exclusion from the entire survey is they said absolutely nothing about Sigil, which I thought was very telling.
Pretty much confirms. Yeah. What our suspitions were.
Exactly. And I mean, it's a bummer because it was something that's, again, could have been really great, but nope. So yeah, I'm going all in into the virtual tabletop that they have, just the 2D one. Cause, and you know,
no seems point, that's where the resources are.
Yeah. No point in doing anything else with that. In fact, if you look at the pre-order for the Dragon Delves, it actually completely says it's adding like 12 stickers in your pre-order if you get on D&D Beyond. So they're definitely leaning into that because I find it weird. You don't say anything like 12 models for a Sigil or something along those lines. So, yeah.
Yeah. Because the whole idea originally was that book comes out and then they drop all the dungeons from each of the adventures in that group into Sigil.
Yep.
And the encounters and whatnot. And that it definitely is not happening.
No, not at all. So yeah, you know, again, we've talked about it before, you know, kind of ad nauseum almost at this point, but I feel bad for the people who really worked on it. Cause I know that they were passionate about it and really excited to, you know, have it out there for people, but it's just, you know, when you have corporate overlords that don't understand the product that the actual, you know, audience wants, then, you know, that situation happens.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Now for some really big stuff.
Yeah.
This news is fairly recent. Only in the last week or so. But it was announced that both Chris Perkins and Jeremy Crawford, Chris Perkins is the creative director for D&D, overseeing story direction, the settings for the game and media, while Jeremy Crawford is the game director, does all the rules and such. Both of them had a large hand in the 2024 D&D 5.5 edition in the Player's Handbook, the Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Monster Manual. Mm-hmm. They recently announced both Jeremy Crawford and Chris Perkins are going to be retiring. They basically described this as something that was their choice and something that they felt was the right time with the new edition. Now, the three core books complete. That was kind of their, you know, magnum opus, I guess, the big finale, as both have been at Wizards, I think, at least 15 to 20 years. So they've been around a long time, since the, you know, fourth edition days, both of them incredibly instrumental in creating fifth edition and obviously, 5.5 as well. And so, it's kind of they kind of termed it closing of a chapter. They're going out with this new edition, and they're going to be kind of handing the reins over to the next generation of D&D people. And so they talked a little bit about how the company's been kind of preparing for this. The timing of the departure was deliberate because they both wanted to wait for the newly revised core rule books to be out. And they said, interestingly, they're not going to replace them immediately. Like, no one's going to step in and replace them immediately. They mentioned that James Wyatt and Wes Schneider, the principal designers who have been part of the D&D team for years, will both have a bigger place at the table. They also mentioned by name Justice Armon, who is awesome. He was on one of like our earliest episodes. Actually, it was an amazing interview. If you want to go back and check that out, but he has been taking more of a leadership role in D&D just in general lately. I believe he's like a project lead now, and so it's kind of cool to hear his name. And so obviously this is kind of really a changing of the guard in many ways, because of all those people, James Wyatt is one of the only ones that has now been there for a really long time, like the 15 plus years. Most of the other D&D designers are like 5 to 7, maybe max. So most of these are all going to be fifth edition people. Even if they, I'm sure some of them have played more than that. But from a design perspective, this is the younger generation, the generation that has been building fifth edition for the last 10 years or so, and will carry it most likely on to sixth edition as well. And so it's very interesting. I think it's really cool, a cool inflection point. Chris and Jeremy have obviously done a lot for D&D. Fifth edition literally revitalized the brand. kind of a big deal. Yeah, kind of a big deal. But at the same time, I'm glad. I mean, I'm not glad to see them go, but I'm glad to see them go, if that makes sense, because it's cool to see them make room for the next generation of designers to kind of take the reins on this next decade or so of 5.5 and then into sixth edition or whatever else may come after this.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, you know, we've talked about how fifth edition was just phenomenally good. And from everything I've done with the 2024 version, 5.5, whatever you want to call it, it's definitely improved the original fifth edition, and I'm pretty happy with that. And, you know, it's a good place to say, I've done it. This is the best version that I'm going to be able to put out right now. And, you know, it's time to move on to something else. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, enjoying what you're doing, pouring your heart and soul and your passion into a project, completing it, and then moving on to another project. I mean, it's kind of a,
especially like after 15 or 20 years. Yeah. That's a long time to do the same thing.
Exactly. Like, look, as much as I want Chris Evans to always be Captain America, it's cool that he's stepping away and, you know, doing other things. You know, it doesn't mean that it's the end of the character. You know, we'll get someone else after Secret Wars or whatever. But anyways, that's an entirely different side topic that we don't talk about on the show. But, you know, having new creative viewpoints and minds and everybody kind of coming into those positions is great, because it's different takes on story. It's different takes on mechanics, new ideas on mechanics and story. And, you know, something that we've always been big champions of in here and on D&D Discussions is different perspectives, different ideas, and, you know, people working together to come together to tell the best story and in the best way. So I'm very excited to have, you know, new blood in there to, you know, either look at old things, or, you know, like, old modules that they want to revitalize or revisit, different settings and everything. Like, that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about, you know, things that I've never done before, like Drakenheim or, you know, Barovia, you know, places that I've never played in, but there's versions of it for fifth edition. So people who have played, you know, previous versions or these versions, but want to tell new stories in those places is just a great thing to do, because they've never done it before. And this is their chance to tell their story.
Yeah. I think that's really what it comes down to, is letting the next generation of people tell their story.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Whether that be in new adventure books, new rule books, or potentially even new editions, because we will likely see, I mean, this is two big people leaving. We'll probably see some new blood coming in as well, in addition to the people who are there already. So I'm very excited to see where this goes. Very thankful to Chris and Jeremy for what they've done for the game over the years. I'm playing through, Chris has written, I think, some of the best stuff for 5e. I mean, I'm playing through Curse of Strahd right now. It's, I think, fairly widely considered the best adventure for 5e, and definitely one of the top D&D adventures, period. So they've contributed a lot. So, best wishes to them and whatever they do, or retirement, if that's what they choose to do as well. And excited to see what the rest of the team and any new team will have for us over these next several years.
Yeah. So good luck to them, and good luck to the new team.
Also fairly big, and this was also just announced a few days ago, they finally released the date for when the core 2024 rules are going to be published into the Creative Commons. And if you recall back, for those who were around for the OGL debacle back a few years back, which ended with the SRD for fifth edition being published into Creative Commons, which cannot be revoked and is a much more, you know, open standard. They promised that all the stuff going forward would be put in that as well, and they would potentially even look into the older editions going into that. Well, they just released the date for the brand new system reference document 5.2, or SRD 5.2. And this is the document that will provide the materials that creators can use to officially publish content compatible with the 2024 rule set. So this is going to be coming out April 22nd. So the day, if you listen to this podcast, the first day it's released, this is the day.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. So it will coexist with the 5.1 SRD. So you will be able to make content for fifth edition with either of them, but the 2024 stuff will then be officially out there for you to make such any third party content. So there's going to be a creator fact page that is information regarding third party products, fan content, and more. They'll also have a new resources like a conversion guide, as well as information about fan content policy, D&D Beyond's homebrew tools, and pointing your readers to the official D&D content not in the SRD. There is going to be the first thing of errata that has been released of the core rules, and the 5.2 SRD comes with those changes implemented. Well, there is now a link to the first big thing of errata for the 2024 edition. We'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. It's a lot of just tweaks, a few spell nerfs that were a little bit overpowered. I've looked through, most of it is pretty standard or pretty common sense type stuff. And with the 5.2 SRD, they're also replacing the free rules, the 2024 free rules on D&D Beyond, with the new D&D Beyond basic rules. And this will likely be more like because the SRD is usually a much more comprehensive chunk of the D&D rules to enable third parties and content creators to make everything they need to for the third party and homebrew products. So that if you're using D&D Beyond for free, this will likely be an upgrade for you as well. So we'll find out more tomorrow from the recording of this podcast, and we'll likely be talking a little more in depth about that next episode as well. I see Ben getting the errata documents.
Yep. Adding to the notes so I can put it in.
I knew you were, I saw your focusing eyes. But yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting to finally have the date for that. Cause they did say it would be released shortly ish after the last, of the three core rule books came out. So it'll be good to see that and then see the content really start flowing, from third party publishers for the new edition.
Perfect.
All right. Whew. Lots of news. I'm sure there's bound to be more next time. But before we go, we wanted to also tackle a little topic that we haven't talked super in depth about yet. And this is something that is very useful for the tier 3 and tier 4 play that I wish we could play in the Dragon Book, and that I was hoping to talk about with this topic, but it turned out that there will probably be a lot less of it than I was anticipating as the new anthology comes out. But we're going to talk a little bit about Legendary Resistance.
Yeah.
More specifically, fixing Legendary Resistance.
By fixing, we mean making it feel good for everybody.
Correct. There's nothing inherently broken about Legendary Resistance. Legendary Resistance is essentially a tool in 5th edition that allows you to not have a boss monster fully incapacitated by a player spell effect round one or round two. Something like a banishment, something like multiple people being able to stun or paralyze, something that would basically negate the threat of a boss fight. And it essentially works in if your boss monster fails a saving throw. With Legendary Resistance, they can choose just to not fail. And obviously, from a DM perspective, that can be good because you don't want your boss monster negated round one and turned into a very simplistic or very boring encounter due to player power or a single spell.
Right.
Or just a botched role.
Yeah. Or just a botched role. Yeah. On your part. But at the same time, especially for spellcasters, having a legendary resistance use can feel really bad because that is a very limited resource, most likely a higher level spell or something that then becomes completely negated. Obviously, you are burning a resource of the bad guy, but when it's basically just a I do this and the DM says, no, you don't. That doesn't feel super great for the player. So there's a really good article I came across called Fixing Legendary Resistance that has three really good kind of remixes for legendary resistance. So I wanted to just mention those real fast. We'll have a link to the article if you want to dive in. But then I wanted to talk to Ben as well, because we have our own ways that we approach legendary resistances. So that even outside of this article, I think we can do even better. And I think the article has a good start. So there are three fixes. Are essentially legendary resistance remix one. If you fail a saving throw using a legendary resistance, you can choose to reroll it. This basically gives you a resource to give you instant advantage, right?
Yeah.
And that probably feels a little bit better because there's still that possibility of failure. But as a boss, it makes sense that you might be more hardened to this thing, right? So that's a very simple, easy way to make it feel a little better. Mm-hmm. Because then if you succeed, you at least had to make two rolls to succeed, right? Number two, if a creature forces your boss to make a saving throw to avoid an effect and it fails, the boss can choose to succeed on the save instead. And if the save was, if the saving throw is triggered by a spell, you still take 1d6 damage per level of the spell slot used to cast the spell, as it must dedicate some of its mental or physical fortitude to avoiding the effect. So for example, now saving against polymorph costs you 4d6 HP at least. The casters are making a contribution to the fight in line with the resources they're expending. I like this one a lot.
This, out of all the ones that are options, this is the one that I like, and I think I might start using this.
Yeah, I like it a lot because then at least you're getting something for your spell slot, right? You're getting mm-hmm. something for the resources you expend. The boss is still saving from whatever horrible thing you yeah. were trying to do.
Like they're not banished for, you know, 10 rounds while everyone holds an action to attack all at once and then just kills them in the next turn anyway.
Exactly. And so then at least you are contributing damage to some extent, and not an insignificant amount of damage. It's not a ton, but it's also not nothing. And it does feel better, and you get to, your players get to roll dice
mm-hmm.
still too, which is always fun to do. So yeah, I like that one. I like that one quite a bit.
Yes.
And then the final one in mentioned in the article is if someone forces your boss to make a saving throw to avoid an effect and it fails, the boss can choose to succeed instead. The strain of avoiding this effect using its legendary resistance gives the boss a level of exhaustion that lasts until the end of the creature's next turn. And let me remind you too, in the new 2024 rules, the exhaustion basically stacks, I think, up to 5 times, and gives a -2 to all D20 tests. So essentially what the caster would be doing in this situation is for the next turn, the boss would be rolling at -2. Which That's not bad.
Yeah.
That could be, that could make a difference between hitting or missing.
Minus two though, on a, like a, especially at higher level play, isn't really going to be that much of a difference though. So it for that, it's really going to depend on, like, you know, what echelon you're playing at. You know, if it's like, you know, the first quarter of levels and stuff, that's a big deal right there. That's almost a guaranteed miss. If you're playing level 16 or something like that, at that point, two isn't a lot. It's not going to affect much.
Yeah, that's more of a mid game type thing, I think, where it would make the biggest difference.
Yeah. There is actually a fourth one on this article as well. So the idea behind that is that, what if the legendary resistance was actually part of their legendary actions? So you'd be using that resource to actually use, your resistance. So instead of being able to, you know, say do another attack by using like one, you know, action or 1 point of legendary actions, you just resist instead. Or, you know, depending on the monster or whatever, you can make it worth 2 points or 2 actions, you know, kind of, you know, vary it that way based on the needs or how it balances out, which I also think kind of works a little bit better. But overall, with all these, I really do like the damage one the best. I think that it's the most meaningful, just because, yeah, you know, the monster's not completely incapacitated. It does get some damage on it. And, you know, you feel so much more fulfilled as a caster, as opposed to, oh, well, now he's not going to hit an extra time on this round. Or, again, like we said, depending on the level, the minus two isn't going to matter. And then just a straight up reroll still doesn't give the player something that they can have. So I think the damage one is the best out of all of these options.
I agree. Of this list, if I were to use one of these, I would use the damage per spell level. But only, obviously, only when the legendary resistance is used, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But still, yeah, it's very good.
Oh, and on top of that, keep it so that they only have three. You know, don't yes. just be like,
yeah,
this isn't an exchange of like, oh, well, they can resist as many times as they want now. No, you still use it with the rules that are in place.
Which would be the problem with making it part of the legendary actions mm-hmm. economy.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I do like the damage one a lot. For me, I feel like what I usually do is kind of go a step further than that, because I like to really work the legendary resistances into the boss's mechanics itself. Mm-hmm. So let's take a dragon for an example. Dragon needs to use a legendary resistance because they failed on a big damage attack that I didn't want to take, right? I use the legendary resistance. I negate the spell. However, something happens. A giant chunk of armor scaling is blown off in the process. Or you have a dragon, and let me finish that example. A giant chunk of armor is blown off. The dragon is now 1 AC lower permanently. And that was the cost of using the legendary resistance. No damage happened, but now the players get something permanent. I think this is a really cool, and it's not always just like an AC thing, right? But think about works the best mechanically.
Yeah, movement. I mean, again, if you want to use dragons again, maybe by, you know, dodging the fireball, it singed its wings. It's not able to fly until it kind of regenerates a little, or, you know, gets its feet back under it or something along those lines.
Yeah, maybe you grounded it for a turn or a whole round.
Yeah.
Or by doing that.
Instead of blinding it, you give it, well, no, because giving a disadvantage on something is essentially the same as blinding it, but maybe it's only for one turn as opposed to, you know, the minute that it would be, you know, depending on the effect or something. You know, again, giving something at the same time as you're taking away, which is sometimes really hard to do as a DM, you know, finding the right balance so that you're also still enjoying the game and, you know, you're the monster that you're playing as well.
Another really cool thing I like to do with it is make it visual, right? You've got a lich. As part of the lich, it's wearing this necklace with three glowing crystals. Each legendary resistance that it uses, one of the crystals goes out. And it's a really cool way to theme it, because you don't even have to say it necessarily, but you can basically imply what it is based on the effect that happens. And maybe it loses power in some way. Maybe temp HP goes away. Or, like, again, it's just really cool. Integrate it into the mechanics. Make it a resource that has give and take versus just a trump card three times. Yeah. Right? It makes the fights much more interesting and dynamic, and gives your players something to look forward to or something to really shoot for, knowing that their resource they're using is going to result in something good for them, even if nothing happens at that moment.
And I mean, just as the, like the necklace example, then at that point you can have characters actually aiming for that, trying to destroy it to take the resource away, as opposed to, you know, only using it, you know, to save from a fail. You know, it obviously it's going to be like, you know, higher DC or something, or AC along those lines, because, you know, targeted attack and, you know, all that stuff. But it adds another depth of flavor to the whole combat. And on top of that too, if let's say you defeat the lich and it only used two of its legendary resistances, there's one left, maybe they can get the necklace and have someone has a legendary resistance till it gets used or something.
Yeah, turn it into a cool magic item, like a limited use magic item.
Yeah.
Like that's a super neat thing to be able to just be like, I just stole the lich's necklace of resistance, and there's one charge left, so I can basically have a legendary resistance when I want to. Mm-hmm. And then it loses its charge and it's worthless. Can't be recharged. So yeah, I love the idea of just playing it around, making it more of a mechanical, thematic thing that the players can see versus just a no, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Type thing. But if you don't want to take the time to build those mechanics, because again, they don't exist. This is work you would have to do as a DM. I do think, as Ben mentioned, that the spell level for damage is a great alternative. Mm-hmm. That can make your players feel a lot better, balance it out a bit more, and still let them roll some dice.
Yeah. And this, I kind of don't want to say it because I don't want to, I don't know, just destroy the illusion, but you also control how much, you know, health the monster has. So if they're rolling super high on that, you know, it could take maybe half of that damage. They tell you a number, you just kind of plug in what you want. You know, it's part of the DM to balance the fight as well as make it fun and meaningful for everybody involved.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about that before. A lot of times, especially those higher level monsters, there's health flexibility built into the stat blocks for a reason. There's obviously an average health, mm-hmm. but there's also a low point, right? Because they give you like this much health plus something D something. Yep. Some amount of dice,
and you can roll could a be on the low on end of every that. Single one of those die.
But you could also roll an 8 on every single one of those dice. Mm-hmm. So you do have that flexibility. Even officially, you have that flexibility as a DM from a health standpoint, if something is burning down way faster than you were expecting it to, mm-hmm. or something is taking a lot longer than you were expecting it to. Like, you can make the judgment call to make those adjustments when you need to.
Yep, definitely.
But how about you? We'd love to hear from you. If you have a special way you like to handle legendary resistances during your big boss battles, let us know. Hit us up on Discord. Shoot us an email at dndiscussions@gmail.com. We'd love to, or hit us up on Blue Sky. We'd love to hear from you get more ideas for how to better use those legendary resistances. Okay. And with that, Ben, I believe you had a community content shout out for this episode. So tell us more about what this video you're going to link is.
Okay. So, I mentioned, Seth Sarkowski before, does a lot of, you know, TTRPG videos on YouTube. And, last week, I believe maybe the week before, he put out a video called, The Problem with Session Zero. And basically it's the idea of, you know, kind of what people get wrong versus, you know, what the session zero is actually there for. And he has a good, you know, some very good points. Some of them I don't, you know, 100% follow the same logic with, but, one of the things that, you know, he kind of points out is like, this is how some people use session zeros wrong. You know, the idea of, you know, the safety tools, discussing the backdrop of the campaign, you know, homebrew rules, all that stuff like that. That's all in there. That's what everybody does. But for people who have, you know, in the same, it's late at night and I can't talk now. But for people who have been playing, you know, in the same group for years and years and years, you're not going to need the same type of session zero as, you know, a group who's coming together for the first time. So, you know, he kind of talks about how, you know, sometimes people just go well out of the way to, you know, define things or do things that they don't really need to. But even more so when people kind of take that session zero and then turn it on its head to kind of use it against the rest of the group. You know, when you talked about safety tools and things like that, where, you know, well, you didn't specifically say that this thing would bother you in session zero, so it's fine and we can do it. Whereas, you know, people are kind of grasping on and thinking that that's the end all be all when, you know, the entire thing is a social contract. You talk about things, and as the game evolves and changes, you're always, you know, kind of talking about things of, you know, what's cool, what's good to do, what, you know, rubs people the wrong way, you know, that whole thing. So it's a video that kind of talks about the way to, you know, handle your session zero, continue on, but understand that it's not the end all be all of this is the only time that you can have those kind of discussions. And overall, I thought it was a really good watch. So I'm going to link it and recommend it because he does really good videos about, you know, different aspects of tons of different types of TTRPGs. So not just D&D. So yeah, recommend it.
Very cool. Very cool. We'll have the link to that video in the show notes as well if you want to check it out. And with that, we have reached the end of our episode. Always a pleasure talking to you, Ben. But of course, before we go, as we usually do, we usually like to talk a little bit about what's going on in our own campaigns. So, Ben, have you played since the last time we talked?
I have played so much D&D since the last time we talked. Two sessions of my campaign. Then I did my final session of DMing for +5. And then on top of that, I was part of an Extra Life fundraiser that I'm going to talk about as well. So strap in. We're going to have a little bit of discussion here really quick. So the last time that I talked about my home campaign, the group had, you know, been to the celebration and everything. They snuck off, found their way into this cavern system, heard some screeching noises, you know, didn't know what's going on. So session starts out, they find out that, you know, their dragonborn friend that they met at the bazaar is a statue made of diamond. And this correlates with the, you know, pieces of people that they found in diamonds and stuff that they've been kind of tracking down to this family, and all the stuff is just, you know, mixing together to, you know, this final thing that's going on. And it turns out that this crime family has been doing alchemical experiments on basilisks so that instead of turning things to stone, they turn them to diamond, and they break those bodies down and use diamonds to, you know, gain wealth. So some pretty foul things. So we had a combat of finding basilisks. And as you know, it's one of the hardest things to run in game to make everybody happy with the situation, because it has to do with, if you look at the basilisk and the basilisk looks at you, then you have to roll a saving throw for it. And if that doesn't work, then you're incapacitated. And then on the next round, you have to beat your save. Otherwise, you're petrified. And it's one of those things where it's not satisfying for everybody, because if you fail it, it sucks. But if you don't, you know, do the mechanic as a DM, then you're not doing the cool things that the monster can do. And, you know, we had a back and forth on a lot of discussion about, like, this is the mechanic, this is how it works. And I don't ever want to run a basilisk again, because I don't think I did it well enough for everybody to have a good time. In fact, I know for certain I didn't.
That's really hard.
Yeah. Because, you know, as the DM, I want to have fun too and do cool things, because my players get to do cool things all the time. But, you know, as soon as I have something that, you know, is some sort of really crappy mechanic for them, it's like, I feel bad that I'm doing it. But the thing is like, I made this monster up forever ago when I came up with the idea of, like, you know, people diamond pieces. So I can't really not do that, you know, to kind of have the follow through. So we go through the combat. Two out of my five people are turned to diamond. So it's not going all that great. And the cleric, who's the only one with greater restoration, decides, I'm going to go ahead and look at this thing and attack it. So he goes and fails his first save. So I'm just like, okay, immediately my mind is, we're going to figure out what's going to happen when the TPK hits. And I had a couple ideas already of, like, okay, this is what's going to happen. These are ideas on what we're going to do. So I had a backup plan if something happened to continue the story. It wasn't just going to be end all be all. So I'm just like, okay, it comes back around to his turn and he goes for his save and fails. And I'm like, oh no. And then all of a sudden someone says, I have my DM inspiration. Can he reroll? I say, yes, reroll. Fails. Another DM inspiration. Oh. Fails. Another DM inspiration. Fails.
No.
And then one more
DM. At that point, I mean.
One more DM inspiration. Because of how well the previous session went, I gave everybody DM inspiration at the start of that session. Not thinking that it was all going to be used in this one spot, and he succeeded, and it was I'm just like, oh my gosh. So yeah, it was crazy that it took five rolls to succeed on this petrification. And like, by the end of it, everyone was just so happy. And I was like, oh, thank God. They were still in a really tight spot, a really bad spot even, but I'm like, at least we have the chance to move forward with this fight to see what happens. So yeah, it was absolutely crazy and intense, and they got through it. They, you know, kind of, you know, collected themselves. The cleric, unpetrified the two party members. He didn't have a high enough, spell slot to petrify, like, or unpetrify their friend and a couple other statues that were in the caverns. So he's like, okay. So while they're down in these caves, they went ahead and sent a message to his father to say, hey, this is going on. His father's the chancellor of the thing. He's also at the party. With them at the party is also their like head of diplomacy, who happens to be able to cast message as well. So he calls the temple and tons of paladins are going to be rushing the compound in about 10 minutes or so. So they kind of, they sat around, they kind of waited for about 10 minutes and then went back upstairs. And then that was the end of the session as I had added like 15, 20 paladins to the map. And I'm like, they're going to raid this thing. They're going to take on the guards. It's going to be great. So then next session comes and they're like, okay, we're going to go in. We're going to run in. They like, the idea was we need to find his dad and then sister to make sure that they're safe and then kind of take care of the situation, because the head of this mob family has one of these relics and it's the Sword of Tyranny, which he can totally command people to do things and stuff. So they chase him into a basement section that they had previously failed to uncover and get into this room. And they see his dad is being held, you know, hostage with the sword to his throat. His sister standing there with a rapier pointed at the bad guy. And then two of the sons of the family in there as well to fight. And so they get into this room and our cleric realizes and, you know, comes to, you know, amazing insight check. The sister is mind controlled. So they're able to kind of, you know, stop that, go through the fight. Amazing fight. It's great. The paladin's relic sword levels up and is now in its exalted form through it.
Ooh, cool.
And on top of that, they took like a seeing orb, an orb that had an eye in it that was watching this thing, threw it into some lava and ended up taking care of everybody. And I mean, it was an amazing fight. They were low on resources because of the basilisks before. And then that's kind of where we ended the session with that. It was great. A lot of fun. Bad guys came to justice. This family was going after the paladin's family. So, you know, two birds with one stone, got a whole bunch of stuff taken care of. And then a lot of the people who were at the party who were, you know, politically against outsiders and foreigners and stuff like that, couldn't remember why they were there, what was going on. So this guy had been going through and just,
oh, so there was tons of people mind controlled.
Yep. Yeah. He was slowly going through and getting people of the council, wanted to become chancellor himself to take over and stuff. So he was working his way through there. Plus, after it all came out, they have another relic. So it is going to be used to, you know, save the world. So yeah, so that was mine. And I'm looking forward to some of the new stuff that's going to be happening in everything. I got a lot of work to do for kind of the next section of this arc. So it's I'm so excited to tell you about it when it finally gets there and they play through it all. But anyways, so we'll get to that. Then, like I said, finished DMing my plus five stuff. So, you know, if you wanted to know anything about that, listen to plus five to hit. And then finally, Nevermore has been doing Extra Life for the helping out the gamers in the past few years. And then last year joined the team and started her own fundraising goals. So this year, last weekend, it was the board game or tabletop gaming days or whatever. It was the Saturday and Sunday. So she ended up putting together an Easter themed one shot for me and then five other people, and we were all space bunnies. So we were all Herringon, but she had found these like little avatars for all of us. It's absolutely adorable. And we were on the hunt to find eggs of these extinct creatures that the evil like robotic bunnies were coming to try to steal to, you know, use for nefarious purposes. So we ended up planet hopping to go find these eggs and everything. And it was a blast. It was a ton of fun. She was super nervous because this is only like the third time that she's DM'd, but everybody had such a great time and it was super creative and great. It's on YouTube. I'll make sure to put a link into the show. You can go and, you know, still donate. We actually raised quite a bit of money, a little over $300, which is awesome. We had people like donating to, you know, give rerolls. have someone roll like a D100, and she had an even wilder magic table to roll off of. So there's like some weird effects happening and stuff. Some people donated, and more monsters were added to things. So it was pretty great. We had a lot of fun with it. So definitely check that out. Like I said, I have the link in the show notes for that. So that's all that's the really D&D cool. that I've been doing. And I'm glad I was able to help with that. But that's my story. What about you? Were you able to get some time in the past 2 or 3 weeks or so?
I was. We had a session just a few days ago. And it was kind of it was one of those sessions where it was just like, okay, got a ton of information. You need to decide what to do with it type yep. sessions. And it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes players can get paralyzed by indecision. Right. And sometimes as a DM, you just have to go, okay, guys, you just need to sit down and talk this out. We don't have to do it in session either. And so that's what they did. They took the time since the last session, and they just talked it out in our Discord and figured out what they wanted to do. So there's just been a whole lot of, you know, again, this has been more of a political intrigue campaign. There's been a lot of really weird stuff of all these refugees getting blamed for bad things. This other group, this mercenary group in the city, getting blamed for trying to steal this relic. Basically, this whole district is just kind of like a powder keg,
yeah,
waiting to explode. And so what they ended up doing is they use some of their familial and just NPC character connections to find some things out, to get in to where this mercenary group is, because they're surrounded right now by the city guard hidden away, and begin talking to them and working on and dealing with them to expose essentially what is going on and the real people behind, you know, all the craziness that's been going on. Mm-hmm. So we kind of played through a lot of that. And it's been really fun, and we're basically poised to do a very big, I guess, infiltration Ooh. Of this church with this corrupted official there, where this artifact is that they think is being corrupted and causing people's nightmares to become real and actually hurt or damage them. So lots of really interesting things coming up in the next session. So I'm excited to talk about it whenever that happens.
Very cool. I'm excited too. You always have, you know, very creative and awesome like story beats. And I'm very excited to hear more about what's going on, especially with an infiltration, because there are limitless possibilities of what can go right and
so much
wrong.
Fun. Yep. Yep. So much fun. One of my favorite things to run.
Very cool.
I've got a lot of very creative players, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, creative players are the best and the worst at the same time.
Yep. Big time. Big time. Until then, though, that is going to be an episode for us. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. We really appreciate you taking the time to do so. Joining the Discord, giving feedback, telling your own stories. We absolutely love to hear those. So thank you so much for that. Before we go, though, Ben, why don't you tell everyone, especially those who might be newer, where we can be reached?
Definitely. Well, first and foremost, you can go with, and I can't believe I'm saying this, the oldest version of contact that you can possibly use to get to us, and that's email. You can send us an email at dndiscussions@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. Tell us your stories about your games, ask us questions, whatever you want. Sometimes, you know, questions turn into show topics, which we're always looking for. So, you know, send us a line or drop us a line. That's what they say. That's what the kids still say, right? But anyways.
Yes.
Yeah. dndiscussions@gmail.com. Aside from that, though, you can reach out on Blue Sky. We are there at DN Discussions for the show. You can find Ryan. He is at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. Definitely check us out. You know, we post infrequently here and there about random things, but hey, it's a good way to contact us, especially if you want it in some sort of short form, you know, discussion or something. Aside from that, though, on dndiscussions.com, our website, you can find a link to our Discord. That's right. We have a place where people actually come and talk to us and share stories and, you know, sometimes ask advice and also, you know, ask questions that also turn into show topics. So, again, one of those things is a great way to contact us. I highly recommend it. Earlier, I did mention Plus Five to Hits. That is a actual play podcast that I'm a part of. That's recently we finished Rime of the Frost Maiden, and then I picked up some DMing duties in the interim here. That's a total of five episodes. So if you want to hear what it's like when I DM, that's, I guess, a good example. That's what some people have said anyway. But check that out. I know the first three episodes were out. I don't know if the fourth and fifth one are yet or not. After that, we are actually starting a brand new campaign after that. So I am no longer going to be Falwyn Foxgrove, the bard extraordinaire. I do have a new character and I am very excited to play them. So we'll just leave it at that. So check out Plus Five to Hit. This show, though, DN Discussions, you can find it on all of your podcast players of choice. Basically, if you're listening to it right now, our next episode and all of our previous episodes are in the same spot. So definitely check that out. And with that, Ryan, as always, it is an absolute pleasure talking to you. I love being able to geek out about D&D and just, you know, gaming in general with you. And of course, listeners, thank you very much for all of your support and, you know, taking a listen. With that being said, everybody, make sure to roll high and be good to each other.
Take care,
and we'll see you soon.